are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, October the 5th. And these finals taking me back to a gripe from the past. This is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in Detroit City covering sports gambling for PlayMichigan.com, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you get $10 off your next order at BuiltBar.com. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast as we can now count the remaining NBA games left on the schedule on one hand. Certainly, no matter, even if it goes the distance, only five more games left in the season. And if I'm a betting man, I would say certainly less than that. But today we're going to give credit where credit is due to the Miami Heat for a big Game 3 victory on Sunday night. We're going to talk about why this game also has me thinking back to February and some bad juju from the Detroit Pistons front office. We're also going to break down what John Hollinger and Nate Duncan had to say about Christian Wood, the Charlotte Hornets, and his upcoming offseason later on. That was from their episode of the Hollinger and Duncan Show on the Locked On Podcast Network last week. But give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore for that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook. But the Miami Heat dropped Game 2 on Friday since we last talked to you guys, but then came back and got the Game 3 victory on Sunday night. A nice win for Eric Spoelstra and the Gents from South Beach. 115-104 was the final on Sunday, cutting the series lead in half for the Los Angeles Lakers down to 2-1 with the Game 3 win. The story on the night, obviously, was Jimmy Butler, Big Face Coffee. He was fantastic. 40 points, 13 assists, and 11 rebounds, and one of the greater finals performance that you'll ever see. This was his opus. This was the best game I've ever seen him play, and obviously this was such a big situation. Do or die, fall behind 3-0. This series is completely over. I had last week, after the injuries to Adebayo and Dragic, been throwing around the sweep term the last couple episodes. Maybe Jimmy listened to Locked On Pistons and got fired up about that. But we've got to give the Heat some credit, and more credit than we certainly did last week. They have earned it in the bubble. You know, that said, we'll cut their legs from under them again once again now here and say it's probably going to be a gentleman's sweep. Anything more than that, by the way, and we might have to start having a conversation about how this ring is not quite as clean, not quite as great of a ring as maybe some of the others throughout the seasons and LeBron's collection, and of course the versus MJ argument kind of thing, the bigger picture stuff that you know we love to talk about here in NBA land. But it does feel a bit semantical, but we'll maybe save those discussions for another night. This night on Sunday was Jimmy's night, without Bam, without Goran Dragic. Hero shot and played poorly for the most part. Kelly Olynyk had a big 17 points off the bench. He's playing pretty well since Bam Adebayo's been out the last couple games. But no one else on the team was great offensively, but the Heat competed as we expect them to do. And after a rough game one, they really responded over the weekend. Got beat on Friday night, but played hard and played well for the most part, but just were overmatched as we kind of anticipated things to go the rest of the way. However, as Stephen A. Smith would say, maybe Bam gets back. Maybe that could change things going forward. We will see. Maybe Anthony Davis has another crap game like he did on Sunday night. Invisible at times, 15 points, a minus 26 from him in Game 3. Just a player who always leaves me, pretty much always, not always, but often, if not more than not, leaves me wanting more. He's a great player. But man, I just don't know sometimes. And the fact that he does things so well and so easily is kind of a detriment on the eye test for how he's doing. You just kind of expect it to be 35 every night. And controlling big games in big moments certainly was not the case on Sunday night, as this was Jimmy's night. LeBron couldn't carry without his partner in crime, Anthony Davis. 26 points, 10 and 8 for him. A rough finish in the fourth quarter for LeBron. The Lakers, 14 of 42 from 3, 33.3%. Kyle Kuzma of Flint had 19 points, 19 as well for Markieff Morris. More on him later. Danny Green, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rajon Rondo, and Caruso combined for 3 of 16 from three-point land, 5 of 26 from the field for those guys. Rick Fox, Derek Fisher, Robert Horry, Brian Shaw, those guys are rolling over in their graves. The Shaq and Kobe supporting cast, those guys are certainly not, especially on this particular night. This series continues on Tuesday night at 9 p.m. That's going to be game 4 of the Lakers and Heat. Then 2 days off after that, so a Friday night game 5, which will be played on 7:30 on Friday night. We're guaranteed to get that one. If necessary, we've got Sunday at 7:30. I'm sorry, the Friday night game 5 is a 9 o'clock start as well. So if they win the championship, that's going to be a late night there. But if necessary, we'll go Sunday game 6 at 7:30. And then Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, 9 p.m. again on the 13th for game 7. But up next, why did I get mad at Ed Stefanski during this game? If you saw my tweet, you may already know. And you might have connected the dots, even if you didn't. But that's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But hey, you know that talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off and blame ourselves, saying things like, I just lost my mojo, or I had a long week at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it tonight. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for AD, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA.
Yes, sir!
All right, later this week, we've got more from Brother Brian, the Almost Legends series. Probably going to drop that one on tomorrow's show. That's Tuesday. Also, some more draft profiles coming this week as well. I'm sure that there's those of you out there who probably listen to the show only for Brother Brian. Now, don't fret; he will be back tomorrow. You've got the non-substitute teacher, I guess the boring permanent teacher back here. So not as fun as Brother Brian, but we'll have him on, of course, Fridays with Brian coming up later this week as well. But on Sunday night, as we mentioned, Markieff Morris dropped 19 points for the LA Lakers in what would be a loss in the NBA Finals. 6 of 13 and 25 minutes off the bench, 5 of 11 from three-point land for the, I don't know, I know they're a few minutes apart. I can't recall off the top of my head if Marcus or Markieff is the older of the twin brothers. Fairly inconsequential, though, but some big ones for threes that were knocked down by Markieff early in the fourth quarter for the Lake Show. And if LeBron and AD were able to pull this one off late, those would have been two of the biggest shots in the whole game. In retrospect, backbreakers that would have effectively ended the series if the Lakers were to win it. Just to reset the Markieff Morris situation with the Pistons, he signed with this team on a one-year deal with a player option for year two coming into this offseason. Played well, really well early. Kind of tailed off a little bit. I think he had some injury issues come December, January, so wasn't maybe quite the same player as he was very early on in the season. But one of the more seemingly attractive pieces for the Pistons to sell off at the trade deadline, as the season had completely unraveled by early February. And there was reporting leading up to the trade deadline from two separate national guys throughout the week leading up to February 5th, I believe, or whatever date it was. Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer and Zach Lowe of ESPN.com both independently were talking about the interest for Markieff Morris. I believe it was O'Connor that said kind of weirdly, definitively, that the Pistons can get a second-round pick if they want one. And he wasn't, in the same report, wasn't talking about that in other player's terms that definitively. So obviously it felt like he knew something, or felt like he thought he knew something. ESPN.com, Zach Lowe saying there was a bunch of teams in pursuit. Maybe I'm getting these reports mixed up, but you get the idea. And listing like every contender that was actually, I think I am getting these mixed up now that I think about it. So I think it was Kevin O'Connor that was actually listing like every contender and an astonishing amount of teams that were interested in Markieff Morris. Teams like the Bucks, teams like the Lakers, the Houston Rockets was a big one mentioned by a few times. I think there were others as well. Also, somewhat related, you recall that Andre Drummond, there were the leaks to Woj from a few weeks before that, early January. ESPN.com's Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that the Pistons are looking to trade him, which was weird that they had that report, that came out so swiftly like that, to that they wanted to sever that tie with Andre Drummond. What if there were no good offers that came in? Obviously, it made him irritated about it. And cut ties with someone who's been very important to this franchise for the last several years. At the time, the written report from Adrian Wojnarowski was the Pistons can try to get the expiring contracts from Atlanta, whether it's Evan Turner was the name out there, Chandler Parsons as well, and also possibly the Nets pick that was lottery protected, but the Brooklyn Nets pick that was out there, and they look like a perfect team for a lottery protected pick because they were going to be probably in the playoffs, but right next there. And it turns out that's exactly what happened. And then a young player possibly added to that mix too. So a really attractive package that seemed unrealistic at the time, seemed like a great deal if you could make it happen for Andre Drummond. The Hawks ended up trading the Nets pick instead to Minnesota in that four-team deal, where Covington went to Houston, Capella went to Atlanta instead for that center hole that Andre Drummond could have filled. I think Beasley went from Denver to Minnesota. Some other things in that deal, four ways, of course. My belief is that all those reports came out of Ed Stefanski's front office. This is a theory. This is not reporting. This is me trying to kind of connect the dots and some things I do know, some things about how it generally works from people I've talked to. And you know, I think you guys know how it generally works in these kind of things. There's always kind of a motivation for leaking these things, and it can help teams and it can create markets. But I believe that Stefanski's front office somewhat clumsily tried to negotiate some of this through the media, tried to spread around leaks to all these guys to throw people off the scent for different reporters having different information, trying to drive up prices on their assets, get word out about offers that might be there, and kind of set the market as high as they can. And turns out they pretty much struck out completely. Things ended up almost as bad as it can get. And then later, to kind of add insult to injury from a fan's perspective, through no fault, well, not no fault, but through small, little fault of Ed Stefanski, in the post-deadline presser, I think it was Rod Beard of the Detroit News, tweeted kind of some paraphrasing of some things that Ed was saying about reactions to it. And Rod tweeting that the Pistons could have gotten a second and didn't want it. And that it turns out that Stefanski was actually talking about the Sfi Mykhailiuk deal from a year previous, where he could have maybe gotten 2 seconds for Reggie Bullock, but instead wanted a second and a player with Sfi because he could put a name on it, was the famous quote there. I was not watching that presser live or listening to it, so I kind of was just following through Twitter, I believe, and I went with Rod's tweet on it. And I was among those fervently of Pistons Twitter kind of spending at least a half day ripping on Ed Stefanski for what would have been, if it was actually what he said, an idiotic quote in, or an idiotic move or non-move to make there. James Edwards of The Athletic has helped kind of clear that up over time, and I think he published the transcript of what Ed Stefanski actually said. I have seen that, and I believe that James was right, that it was a misunderstanding in the moment, which is perfectly reasonable, happens to journalists that are trying to get the information out there from press conferences. No harm, no foul. But at the end of the day, we had some Pistons fans with inaccurate takes of Ed Stefanski and what happened there with the trade deadline. And then furthermore, you get nothing for Langston Galloway. He could help someone. He came off a strong year last year. Now he's going to be lost for nothing for the Pistons. Nothing for Reggie Jackson. That was expected. It was such a big deal. It would be hard to fit in his big contract at the trade deadline with a contender. Nothing for Derrick Rose. He would have loved this bubble, all the hooping that was going on there. That would have been perfect for him. All the time, basketball. He would have certainly helped someone. We didn't know at the time that we were heading towards the pandemic, of course. But playoff basketball, certainly Rose, I think, would have helped somebody out watching some of these teams that need some help there. We'll see how Rose's time with Detroit comes along. If there's a better deal this offseason, I kind of expected he'll be back with the Pistons next year, and I don't agree with that either. Talking about the blunders of the trade deadline, Andre Drummond was a bit of a complicated story. I'm going to have to give some credit there because at the time I criticized the deal with Cleveland. I opined that my guess was that holding on to him would have resulted in more value for the Pistons organization. I would say as we sit here on October 5th that I probably am wrong about that take. So I can't change the take because you can only make the take at the time and say what you think then. So I think that as I sit here now, I think that my take from the trade deadline of it being a bad deal is going to end up aging poorly. Now, I could be right back then, and now my take today could end up being wrong. We'll see what happens with that cap space. I think that the pandemic in this situation is going to end up helping the Pistons and that they are more likely to come off better from the Andre Drummond deal with the cap space because of all the financial questions with teams that want to probably shed more salary this summer than maybe they previously wanted to before. So I think that's going to work out for the Pistons. We'll see it. Obviously, that's the big question, the cap space this offseason in addition to the number 7 pick. But back to Markieff, they ended up getting nothing for him at the trade deadline despite those reports from earlier in the week. They bought him out a couple days later. The Lakers sit back, give up absolutely nothing to get him, and the Pistons let it happen. Again, it makes sense with Reggie Jackson because you end up saving like real money. You know, it's prorated for the rest of the season, which was about 2 months at that point. But Jackson was making so much that you really do save a lot of money. He wasn't staying anyway. With Markieff, he had that player option for the next year. And I know they wanted to get rid of him. They didn't want him picking up that option. But why not? He's a cheap, low-salary guy. He's going to be, at the end of the day, somewhat comparable to whoever they come in and bring in this offseason and pay money to, unless the backup big situation will be one of those contracts you bring in to eat up that cap space and to take other assets along with it. But I don't think that Markieff Morris's contract for next year was going to hamstring them if he did pick it up, which is another open question as well, that 3.7 or whatever million it was that he was had an option on next year. Or if he did pick it up, maybe you can trade him next offseason if he's playing pretty well like he did this year and like I figure that he's going to play at least pretty good next year. My advice to the Pistons front office after a decade of failure is stop being a pushover. Stop being a wasteland. Stop facilitating titles for LeBron James. Don't be a team that agents and Rob Pelinka and Rich Paul can just walk over. I'm assuming that the Lakers and maybe Houston, whoever was maybe bidding for Markieff Morris at that time, that and it's minimum contracts. You know, if a guy gets bought out, they just get prorated minimums. So it's not like it's a money issue. Markieff just had his choice. If those teams know that you're just going to buy him out, why would they give you an asset for him? So you feel like the Lakers probably had some intel on that, and maybe that came from the Pistons. And yes, it's a balancing act because as an organization, you want to make agents happy in certain situations, and maybe these kind of less consequential moves for the future of your team, whether it was a second-round pick that maybe you sacrificed instead. I would have just been a hard ass about this situation and said, no, it's not worth it to us to make Rich Paul happy. Markieff's a Rock Nation guy, so Rock Nation being in good graces with the Pistons doesn't seem to be something that is going to pay big dividends in the future. I don't really see a world where Rock Nation or Rich Paul says in the future, you know what? The Pistons did us a favor with Markieff. We'll send some huge big-time free agent their way. I just don't see that's going to happen. And with Ed, you know the story from there. After such of a miss of a deadline, he headed to a promotion this offseason. He's going to oversee Troy Weaver after he was hired. And you know what? Troy Weaver is better than Ed Stefanski. Let Troy Weaver hire someone below himself. There's only one assistant general manager that was brought in by Weaver. It's still, to me, I got that nagging feeling that this feels like it's the Arne Telleman, Ed Stefanski show in a big way going forward. I know they talk about collaboration, but we want accountability here in Detroit, and the Bucks got to stop somewhere. I'm not comfortable with how the Troy Weaver era is starting. For Troy, with me, and maybe this is unfair, he's already got about a strike against him, maybe something like a half a strike, because he's just joining this old regime instead of coming in fresh. Now, I'm giving Troy a chance, a big chance, with putting his first team together, believing in his pick at number seven and his scouts and his sense for finding the right players. But, man, I still got that bad taste in my mouth. I haven't really thought about it all that much lately in these last several months of the bubble and the shutdown and all that. Been thinking more about old times Pistons and team culture and all that stuff. But just thinking about February's trade deadline, seeing Markieff stroke threes in the fourth quarter of Game 3 of the NBA Finals, it took me back to that place and reminded me of that debacle that was this year's trade deadline. I don't like it. Didn't like it at the time, and don't like it still as we sit here today. Although the Drummond move could end up paying dividends, and effectively that was the most important move or non-move that they made. So certainly they could salvage it if they do the right things this offseason going forward. But up next, we're going to check with one of the flagship shows of the Locked On NBA Network. Hollinger and Duncan, they fielded a question during their mailbag episode the other day, last week, about the Charlotte Hornets, and talked extensively about Christian Wood. So I'm going to start the next segment by playing that for you guys and hear what they have to say about what they think is going to happen with Christian Wood. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team, every day. But hey, got to tell you guys about Built Bar. I got a new shipment last week. I'm back in Built Bar riches. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. The improved Built Bar is even better than before. The six new flavors, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Add those to the 12 OGs. You've got yourself a great start to the day. Maybe pre-workout, maybe post-workout. All those things going to fill you up, but it's not going to ruin that gut. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They are delicious. They are soft and easy to chew, and they are healthy. Great for the health-conscious guy. Lose or maintain that weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Great for the keto diet as well. I spend my own cash on this. These guys sponsor the show, so they kick in a little bit of the salary, and I make sure I keep that flowing for them because they're such a good product that my hard-earned money goes right to Built Bar. BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKDOWN. You'll get $10 off your next order, even if you used that back in the day. Use promo code LOCKDOWN for $10 off at BuiltBar.com.
What do you see the Hornets doing in free agency? Swagtimus Prime asks us, are there any targets that make sense for them? What does this team do? I mean, they have some money, but like, what do they do?
Yeah, I mean, let's start off with their situation. On the odd event that Nicola Batum opts into the $27 million that he's due, they will be about $19 million under the cap. They don't really have anyone that they want to re-sign. So probably, do they spend it? Do they try to get a center? I mean, I think their best option is just try to pick up some assets for teams that are trying to reduce salary and stay under the tax.
Absolutely. Yeah. They should be doing what Memphis did, what actually the Clippers did before they signed Kawhi, in the Harkless deal. But the number one thing is to obtain assets. And then the number two thing, I think, is to kind of go body snatching, which is make a list of guys 25 and under who might be good targets, to outplay their contract over the next 3-4 years. Try to get them on longer deals, but value deals, and try to build your asset base that way. I think that makes more sense than sort of splurging on, you know, we'll spend the $17 million on this half good player who is 31 and helps us win 28 games this year instead of 23, right? Like, I just don't see the point of that.
Well, the two players with whom they've probably most often been linked are Christian Wood and Montrezl Harrell. They do need something. They've got Cody Zeller, who's a solid player, but one thing is when your offense is terrible, center is probably the easiest position to find cheap offense at and boost yourself for a regular season offense. Mm-hmm. Devontae Graham, particularly because he's kind of a limited 2-point player, having a guy who can really finish around the rim in the pick and roll, I think would really help him. So, but okay, Wood is 24. He could be part of what you're doing. And Harrell, 26, I guess he could be. He might even be undervalued at this point after his miserable playoff experience. So it's just the question of what is spending your money on those guys get you in the long term?
Right. I think another guy who's interesting for them is potentially Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah.
Even though he's not like he's not going to give them as much offensively, but in terms of having like a legitimate, solid starting five who can be with you for a while, I think dropping a sheet on him would be really interesting.
What's your offer sheet to him?
You probably got to go around 10 a year.
Wouldn't you rather just try and get Christian Wood for that money?
Potentially. I wonder how high the number is going to go on Wood.
You think that the 10 is not enough?
I wonder. He's a hard one for me to project. I think people are still a little all over the place on him and how they view him.
Yeah. Well, that's the early bird rights for Detroit. Although I think that's probably being overstated a little bit because I don't see Detroit being like, oh yeah, let's use all of our cap space and then we'll immediately rocket 10 million over the tax or 15 million or 15 million over the tax once they sign a bunch of minimums and stuff, or not over the tax, over the cap. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't see this being expensive. Detroit,
yeah, the only reason Detroit would do that would be if somebody paid them to take a player, right?
Yep.
That's the only scenario where that becomes realistic. But yeah, I mean, I think the early bird thing probably doesn't really matter for Detroit. I could see a corner case where like they tried to get Fred VanVleet and Wood at the same time, where it might matter.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If we're gonna do the Tom Gores chase the eighth seed. But it doesn't. It's reporting has indicated that they're supposedly going away from that approach now. Next question here.
I hope.
Sorry, do you have anything else?
No. I think that's enough Hornets for one day.
So there is the great John Hollinger and Nate Duncan talking about the Christian Wood and how it ties into the Hornets. Now the Pistons and the Hornets are in similar situations. We'll be looking at a lot the same players. So I figured you guys might want to enjoy that perspective from the great Hollinger and Duncan podcast, which is part of this network. So be sure to check those guys out as well. A lot of great content here across the network that's been working hard. You know that the Locked On Lakers and Locked On Heat probably have some interesting things to say these days. Locked On 76ers, I can imagine, is a show to check out as well. But this is the show you check out all the time, and we want to keep it that way. So thanks for listening. And that wraps up this edition of Locked On Pistons. I am your host, Matt Shook. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of that one, Hollinger and Duncan. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.